announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
Hey, welcome to another edition of the Filthy FRB Show for Sunday, June 28th, and that's the second week in a row I've got the intro correct. How about that, Tom?
Way to go, buddy.
But I didn't introduce myself and I didn't introduce you, so I did fuck it up.
Yeah. How about this? Let's try this. Sunday, this coming Sunday, tune in to the FRB Show with Front Row Brian, and you can listen to him with his co-host, Filthy Tom Lawler.
I like that. We might have to use that as the opener. So,
but choking after
a very interesting comment last night from you on Twitter, Tom. You called me a supervillain. I don't know if that was like a tip of the cap or a condemnation.
It was 100% a compliment.
So what did you say? Yeah, you're a villain, a super villain. And who are you talking to, Snowden?
No, I was talking to our buddy Vinny Megaanus there.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Remember. Okay, we'll get to this later, but I'm sure a lot of the big news coming out of the fights last night with the UFC is centered around Yoel Romero and his affinity for Jesus and his distaste of gay Jesus, which apparently is really not what he said, but Twitter was blowing up with news that Yoel Romero was anti-gay. So that's what it was in reference to. My comment was, Brian, that if he really was going to live his gimmick, he would have moved to the Vatican City to be the soldier of God.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Isn't that what Rampage calls himself too? Soldier of God?
I think he has a tattoo that says God's soldier.
Oh, so. God's soldier. All right, so we'll talk about that a little bit later. But on Friday night, there was a Bellator show from Kansas. And did you get an opportunity to watch it? Or?
Yep.
All right, so do you watch the prelims? I mean, I don't want to put these guys down because I know that they train hard and they're talented in their own right. And, you know, they do their job by selling a lot of tickets, you know, to their friends, which really helps the promotion. But sometimes it's really tough to get into those prelims because you're probably never going to see that guy again.
Yeah, I know that because of the area that it's in and you know, they do get a lot of fighters that you won't see on a bigger national stage. Kind of like, you know, the week before, the undercard was littered with guys from the Shamrock FC promotion, which is a Midwest St. Louis-based promotion. So you always get, especially with Bellator, you get guys coming out of, hometown guys in the area that they're holding the card. And this card was at the Kansas Star Arena. So you're going to be getting people from not necessarily the hotbeds of MMA here in Mulvane, Kansas.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at the – I was just having a sip of my Coors Light there. That's the reason for the delay. But I was looking at the prelims here, and it looked like Bubba Jenkins was on the prelims. And he was – man, I mean, he was right in the center of the prelims. Like, he wasn't even on the, you know, like the top prelim of the night. And he actually won. I think that's the only name I actually recognize on here.
Well, I recognize the guy that he beat, Joe the Nose Wilk. I've seen his name before. But the thing with Bellator prelims, Brian, is I don't think they're necessarily putting them on in like the order of the how they view the participants. You know, I don't think that Bubba Jenkins being in the middle of the prelim card necessarily means they think he's the middle of the card fighter. When it comes to the prelims, you know, because he is one of their better prospects for the future.
Yeah, I mean, just to talk a little bit about Bubba Jenkins, you know, I had some really high hopes for him. He had some incredible wrestling credentials. Some of you might remember he pinned David Taylor, the great wrestler from Penn State. I think that was in 2011, and Bubba Jenkins was at Penn State and then transferred to Arizona State. And there was a lot of hype, and people were really happy when he came to MMA. And it seems like he hasn't really shown the skill set that we hoped that we would see.
Yeah, well, you know, some guys have a tough time adjusting. Obviously, everything's different, you know. With amateur wrestling, a lot of it is dependent on setups. And those same setups don't work when you're going for the takedown in MMA. So you have to adjust. You have to learn new ways to set up your takedowns. Obviously, you're not going to be in a collar and elbow tie or faking a low single to get a reaction in a mixed martial arts fight. That'll get your head knocked off. So, you know, guys have to adjust, and some people find it easier to do so, and, you know, some people don't.
Yeah, he is 27 years old. He's 9-2 now. You know, he's got some time to kind of reach his potential in this game, but, you know, he's not 22 or 23. So within the next couple of years, I think what we see is probably about as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, that ends up being the case. You know, just coming in with great wrestling credentials doesn't necessarily translate into winning a mixed martial arts fight, even if it's against other wrestlers. You know, there's plenty of instances where guys who were less credentialed wrestlers are able to win the takedown battle or win the fight against somebody who holds an advantage and, you know, possibly their biggest advantage. So it's a completely different game, man.
Yeah, and, you know, there's some people that say he was never really in love with wanting to be a fighter. It was more about being famous.
Yeah, and that could be the case. I think a lot of young fighters now, they do get into the game for different reasons than, you know, us grizzled veterans who've been around for a while. I was a UFC fan before it was popular at all. So I know what it's like to, you know, want to be involved in a sport where there's really no money and no fame. You know, unless you're looking to get laid on an Indian reservation, it wasn't exactly the big hot thing to do back in the early 2000s was being fights. So, nowadays, you know, these damn young whippersnappers have a different view of it and get into it, you know, sometimes for money, which is, you know, if you can fight for money and you don't love it, more power to you. So some people do it for that. Some people do it for the fame. Some people, you know, want to get laid. They want a free, free car at the local dealership, you know, stuff like that. So there's a lot of different reasons why people get into it. And, you know, there's no saying at the end of the day, what's right, what's wrong, as far as your motives. And I don't know what Bubba Jenkins' motives are, but, you know, as long as he keeps winning fights, he's going to keep you booked.
That kind of reminds me of a saying. I saw an interview with Kid Rock, and they said they always ask him, or they always ask musicians, it's like, hey, why do you do that? Why do you do this? You know, why'd you pick music? And Kid Rock was criticizing the guys who say, oh, I love the music. And his point was, well, of course you love the music. The real reason you're here is to get laid and make money.
Yeah.
You know?
At least he's calling a spade a spade. Are you a big Kid Rock fan, Brian?
You know, I mean, when that album, what was the album that came out? I was in high school. Was it Devil Without a Cause?
Yeah, Devil Without a Cause.
Yeah,
I believe Cocky was the follow-up, I think.
I mean, I think he's got some good songs, but, I've never been to a Kid Rock concert or anything.
Really? I mean, he's a big-time country guy now. I'm surprised.
Yeah, you know, I haven't been to a concert since 2012. I went to see Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Man in Atlanta.
I thought you went to WrestleMania weekend.
What do you mean? What happened?
I thought you went to a concert that weekend.
Oh, yeah. You know, I did go to Garth Brooks.
Well, what the hell? Come on. I got a better memory of your life than you do, Brian.
Yeah.
This is a stark contrast from the guy I met 6 years ago at a hotel bar in New Jersey who knew more about me than I did. You're slacking.
Yeah. I don't know as much anymore. It's gotta be the drinking a little bit because, man, that was kind of a whirlwind. On Friday, I flew all the way out to Portland, and then we get in this RV, we stop in Corvallis, and then we drive down to Sacramento and go to the concert and sleep an hour and then drive to San Jose and hang out for an hour and then go over to Levi's Stadium. It was kind of a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But, just...
Life of a...
Yeah. I mean, the main card of Bellator, Pat Curran versus Emmanuel Sanchez, who is a Duke Rufus guy from Milwaukee. And I don't think there was really too much to this. Pat Curran, you know, just pretty much beat him up in every way you probably could without finishing him, and 30-27 across the board. Did you see anything in this that worth talking about?
No, not really. To me, it looked like a fight between two guys who had trained together in the past and respected each other and didn't really, want to go after each other. And lo and behold, that's what it was.
Yeah, so Pat Curran, at one point he was one of their golden boys there, and I guess he still is. He's one of their bigger names. But he's a guy, his last five fights, he's 2-3. He's lost to Daniel Strauss, he's lost to Pitbull, he's lost to Vichel, if I'm saying that correctly. Hopefully I'm not butchering the guy's name. But he did avenge the loss to Strauss. So, and he also beat Pitbull by split decision a couple of years back. Do you see him on the decline, or do you think he's somebody that could still ascend to the top of the Bellator featherweight division?
I don't know. And fight, he didn't look spectacular. And I don't know if it was Jimmy Smith or actually Curran himself who brought this up, but he's kind of fallen into this habit of being kind of like a one-dimensional guy. He basically just relies on his stand-up, and in the past I think he was more well-rounded, so I think if he goes back to a more well-rounded attack, obviously he's still young and has some really great potential, but a few years ago he looked like he was one of the best guys in the world at 145, and right now he just doesn't look like the same guy.
Yeah, do you think he's not putting as much emphasis on his grappling? Because he's a big guy for 145 pounds. He's 5'9", and I got to think, he's damn close to a 180 walking around. I mean, he looks like a guy who could impose his will in the cage with these smaller guys.
Yeah, I think that's what he should do. You could see it in the third round. Curran got the takedown and put a little bit of a beating on him. But he might be better served doing that earlier in the round, or at least faking takedowns and pushing that action so that he can get a good response and land some more strikes cleanly. Because like I said, just a couple of years ago, I thought that he was arguably one of the top guys in the world at his weight. And, obviously right now I wouldn't say the same thing. He's still damn good, but
yeah. Yeah, he's definitely slipped a little bit, but the next fight,
Before we can get to that fight, Brian, next fight, they show Randy Couture in the crowd with, if you had to guess, who would he be with?
Well, he's got a new girlfriend, Mindy. Was he with Mindy?
I don't know if that was her, but it was some hot-ass, young-looking blonde. So
yeah, that's Mindy.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't really worried about what her name was.
Yeah, that's Mindy. It seems to be getting pretty serious. I think that would be marriage number four for Randy.
Yeah. Hey, maybe after that, if it goes sour, they could start their own stable. His four exes.
Yeah. So Randy Couture's in the crowd with Mindy, who I didn't get a chance to meet at the Randy Couture roast in St. Louis, but I was alerted that was her name. So the next fight was Joe Schilling, the kickboxing star, or if Joe Rogan has it his way, Joe Schilling will be Ronda Rousey and Floyd Mayweather put together as far as popularity.
Yeah, I like Schilling.
Yeah, I mean, he's an entertaining fighter, but he's fighting a guy, Hisaki Kato, or Kato, however you want to say it, and I guess he was only, 4-1? I mean, not a very experienced fighter.
Yeah, going into the fight, he was 4-1, and that one was actually his last fight, which I believe he lost by KO or TKO in the first round. So he was coming off a loss, and if you think he wasn't being set up to lose here, you're a fucking moron.
Yeah. I mean, Hisaki, have you seen the Superman punch actually work?
I've seen it. Oh, well, GSP would hit it all the time. And yeah, I've seen it work.
No, I mean for a knockout.
For a knockout? No, I do not remember. I see one for a knockout. Romero almost hit one like off the cage and to knock out Machida last night. And nobody's talking about how awesome that was. But
yeah, that was, you know, just to get off topic for a second, that was so weird. He did that. It was so cool. And then when they did the round, the replays from the round, they didn't even show that.
Yeah. And it was in like the middle of a flurry. Like he hit him a couple times, ran off the cage, hit him again, and kept hitting him. And it was like, just pushed by the wayside. Maybe they thought he tripped and I don't fucking know. I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, Kato here, I mean, he's being brought in to lose. That's the only way I can look at it. You know, obviously for the American crowd, it would have looked better if Schilling won because it's somebody that Bellator management seems to be behind. And he is a really, really exciting fighter. Unfortunately, he was also coming off a loss here. So you had two guys coming off of losses and, pretty much, I mean, Bellator got the knockout that they wanted, just not by the guy that they wanted.
Now, I thought I read, I don't know, maybe I saw it on Twitter, or it was on MMA Fighting, but Schilling called Kato a pussy in between rounds, that he wouldn't stand with him. Because, you know, I mean, he did stand with him for the majority of the first round, and then he just took him down, and you could even hear Jimmy Smith was like, oh, Kato didn't like that body kick. And I don't think it was he didn't like the body kick. He just saw it's a fight. You strike, you take the guy down, you do what you got to do to win the fight.
Brian, Kato actually got a takedown a minute 30 into the fight. So he was kind of content to stand there for a little bit, but then, you know, Kato got the takedown on Schilling, and Schilling just didn't, you know, he wasn't very active on bottom, a lot of holding on. Kato didn't do a whole lot, but he definitely did enough to, you know, to win and edge out that round. So, you know, I could see why Schilling was, I could see from Schilling's point why he was calling him a pussy, because Kato was brought in as like a stand-up guy and did get on top and get the takedown. But it's an MMA fight. What the hell do you expect?
Yeah, and I think Kato was talking a little bit before the fight, saying, yeah, that's great. And I'm paraphrasing here from Sean Wheelock. You know, that's great, Schilling. He's good with his big gloves, but I'm a small glove fighter. And he backed it up.
Oh, did he ever? I mean, this has to be one of the all-time best knockouts in Bellator history. And, you know, it's up there for MMA history, too. Just a great, I mean, the most solid Superman punch in the history of MMA.
And like I said, I've never seen, you know, we've seen Superman punches connect, but not for a knockout. And not just for a knockout, Schilling went down like he was shot.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it kind of reminded me of the way Chuck Liddell went down when Rashad hit him at UFC 88. I know another guy I follow, Luca Fury on Twitter, said it was the same. It looked exactly the same as when Chris Leben knocked out Terry Martin in 2007 at a fight night. I don't know. You remember that fight, Tom?
I don't remember. I mean, I remember that fight happening, but I don't remember.
So here's the thing. Like, Martin nails Leben, and Leben is just – he's almost out on his feet and just kind of uses the fence as a springboard, puts his back against the fence, and then just comes forward with this desperation left hand and just kills Martin.
Yeah,
it was an incredible knockout because he looked like he was totally out of it. But you know, I mean, this knockout by Kato was pretty incredible, and we have another great knockout to talk about a little bit later. But man,
no, that one's coming. you got to mention it before I did. Damn it.
So yeah, I guess we said enough about that one, but. John Alessio versus the caveman, David Rickles. Now, I guess I should have prefaced my introduction to Alessio by saying the Academy Award winning John Alessio.
this one, boy, I'm not too sure on this situation here.
Because when Rickles threw, I think it was a left knee to the side of the head. Like, you could kind of tell, like, when he was almost about to hit him, you saw him, like, his actions, you could say, okay, he just knew that he fucked up. So he pulled the knee a little bit. Like, it's not, he didn't, like, crush him like prime Mark Coleman you know, in pride knee. Do you think he pulled it a little bit? Because at the end, he was like, oh, fuck, I just did something stupid.
Yeah, I think it's one of those instances is as he was doing it, you know, he kind of realized that he had screwed up. And I think he even said it, you know, it looked like he was mouthing, you know, that he knew that he screwed up and he was, you know, kind of beside himself. But Alessio, you know, and far be it from me to call somebody out on something like this because, you know, we're not in the cage. We don't know exactly what's going on. But it looked like he took the easy way out because as soon as he got hit, he pops up, complains about the knee, and then goes back down. So, you know, very controversial end to the fight, and it was a no contest.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think that the way the rules are, there is a case that maybe Alessio should have just won by disqualification?
You know, I'm reading the rules as we go right now.
Yeah.
And it's tough to make this determination.
Because the way Sean, you know, Wheelock, I mean, I don't know how well Sean Wheelock knows the rules. Obviously, he knows it better than me because I'm quoting him here now. And he said that the referee can take into account the severity of the – they called it an accidental strike, but it's not accidental. I mean, he did it. I mean, I don't get – I don't understand accidental versus –
Yeah, you know, the way that I understood it, you know, was that, like, okay, so say he had gone for, you know, he was transitioning or something into a front headlock or something, they were in a strange position, and he accidentally knees him in the head, okay? To me, that would be accidental. What right. Rickles did, unfortunately, was not accidental. You know, it was definitely intentional. Whether it was intentional as a illegal move is another thing because I don't think it was, you know, I don't think he went, oh, I'm going to follow this motherfucker and knee him in the head. I think he was just caught up in the moment, but it's still an intentional knee. He still meant to throw that knee, you know?
So how about this theory? The referee called it unintentional. So we didn't have to disqualify Rickles.
Yeah. I think that's what happened.
So 100%. maybe the referee, he's like, yeah, it was intentional, but I can't DQ this guy. He was boxing him up, and you know Alessio was on Queer Street before this happened.
Is and, that does Gay Jesus live there?
it's possible. I mean, you know, Romero follows me on Twitter. I don't know if how good is I don't know if he reads. I know he. He speaks English. I mean, not great English. I don't know if he reads and writes. I can send him a DM and maybe we can kind of ask him about this whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you could Alessio is getting beat up, you know? So that's where I'm almost like, all right, man, you know, you could kind of see he ate quite a few punches from Rickles. So maybe the knee did kind of really disorientate him, but you know, I still think he took the easy way out.
Yeah, I do as well. But, you know, who knows? I mean, he did take a knee to the head. And we got to throw all that. I mean, even if the knee didn't do a lot of damage, he was getting his ass beat before that. So
right.
Who knows, right. You know, how much he had left in the tank regardless. So that's another issue with the rules. It's like he was going to lose. I mean, he was – the referee could have stepped in right there and called it. And I don't think anybody really would have complained about the illegal knee. You know, he could just said he was stepping in before that because you could make a case that Rickles was really about to stop him. So just an unfortunate thing. And, you know, luckily for Dave Rickles, it came out as a no contest instead of a loss on his record because that would have been a shame. And I really like this guy. You know, Bellator, he's not like sitting around at the top of the title picture, but he's a really good character and he's a beast, man, you know?
Yeah, he really seems to get it. You know, his walkout was pretty entertaining. He's got all these crazy outfits and, you know, really young guy. He's only 26 years old. And, you know, I don't think he can beat the top guys in the division. You know, he lost to Chandler. He lost to Pitbull's older brother. But I think he's a guy that they could, you know, I guess he's already a draw to a degree, but he's a guy that they could have as one of their staples.
Yeah, I think so, especially in this market, in the Midwest, the middle of the country, Middle Earth, whatever it is. He just seems like he's a great character, and he'd be, you know, a good draw. I tune in to watch Dave Rickles. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, and Alessio. Alessio put a pretty scathing message on Facebook. You know, like he got a lot of saying that he got a lot of messages about people saying that he took the easy way out, and he seemed really, really agitated about it. And it's almost like, you know, those are the situations, man, where you just got to turn the phone off. You know, it's better not to know.
Yeah. Because I mean, even if he was, you know, if he was unable to continue because of that knee, and that's what did the damage. I mean, he's in a situation where not a lot of people are going to believe him. So kind of sucks for him in a lot of ways. But, you know, I think it kind of sucks for Dave Rickles worse.
And, you know, Alessio, you know, we're talking about not really an old guy. But he's 35 years old. And I think he's got about 60 professional fights. And, you know, he's one of these guys that you'd say, you know, you probably need an exit strategy. You know, I don't know if you should still be doing this.
Hey, I mean, the guy's been around forever. His first fight in the UFC was a UFC title fight against Pat Miletich, right? So yeah. Think about how long ago that was. So.
It's amazing that he's only 35. It's like I said, to have that many fights and, you know, kind of a throwback, because I don't think in this next generation of fighters you're going to see anybody, you know, be in their early to mid 30s with 50 to 60 fights. If you fight three times a year now, you're working hard.
Yeah. Hey, Brian, this is like way off topic, yeah. But you know, I have these rules in front of me. Okay. One of them says, and this is under the heading of injuries sustained by fair blows and fouls, right? If a contestant injures himself or herself while attempting to foul his or her opponent, the referee shall not take any action in his or her favor, and the injury shall be treated in the same manner as an injury produced by a fair blow. So if you try to injure, like say you go for a kick to the balls and blow your knee out, well, you're going to lose the fight. You know?
Well, that makes sense. I mean, that's a good rule.
Yeah, but I can't believe that it even has to be put into writing here. Like, you injure yourself intentionally trying to follow somebody.
Yeah, and, you know, to speak in a more general context, I don't understand why knees are illegal. Now, I can see why the soccer kicks, because some of the soccer kicks just, they look horrible. It makes a sport maybe a lot more violent than it really needs to be. But the knees to the ground, I mean, are they that much worse than Yoel Romero elbows, for example?
I mean, if you're going to talk about the damage that's done, apparently not, I think. But
I mean, what do you think? Because, I mean, you're in there. I mean, would you like the option to be able to knee people on the ground? Or do you kind of like that security knowing, you know, let's just say somebody has you on your back that – that's one thing you don't have to worry about.
No, I 100% would love it if knees were included. I think it definitely changes the strategy of the fight. But I mean, if I can get somebody down in a front headlock and hold them there, I mean, why should I be able to knee them in the head? I guess the biggest issue that people run into is it just looks barbaric. You know, it's not any. I don't think it's going to do very much more damage than Yoel Romero's elbows. I mean, I don't know if it could. So, yeah, I think it's just a perception thing. Obviously, soccer kicks are a different rule to me. They're a different thing. But knees, I think, would change the game for the better.
Do you like the soccer kicks?
As a fighter, I wouldn't be opposed to them. I think most of the fans view it as, you know, too barbaric.
Yeah. I mean, I remember who was in that fight? In 1FC, and it was a real eye opener. It was just like, oh man, maybe these
probably where Roger Huerta got his head kicked off by Zorobabel Moreira.
Okay, I think it was. Oh yeah, and that was one of those where it's just like, all right, maybe we don't need these in the sport.
Yeah, that one was really bad. Like, I mean, it was awesome. It was awesome to see. If you're a spectator, not too great for Roger Huerta, but yeah, that one looked really brutal. And I think that may have been, I don't know. I know 1FC went through a slight rule change with the soccer kicks and stuff, but I have to review their actual rules because I get confused.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to the main event of the evening was Czech Congo versus Nikolai Volkov. And Congo pretty much just dominated, you know, took him down whenever he wanted. It wasn't really too much to this.
Yeah, pretty damn boring. Congo, I don't know, maybe just he learned from King Mo's strategy against him.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Congo's kind of an underrated grappler. I mean, I remember, wasn't Paul Buentello? Didn't he fight Paul Buentello? And Paul was always known, pretty good takedown defense. I think he wrestled in college, and Congo just kind of took him down and, you know, beat him up. I mean, for a guy who came up in Muay Thai, he's a pretty decent grappler.
Yeah, I think I remember back in the day they were saying he was a French Greco-Roman champion, but yeah. I don't know the validity of that.
It's like that intercontinental title tournament down in Argentina or Brazil.
Yeah, down in Brazil. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to check the record books and check Congo's wrestling credentials. But hey, he did take down Cain Velasquez.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, he lit Cain up. I think that was UFC 99.
Yeah. You know what? Forgot he beat Cain up standing and took him down and still got waxed. So yeah. He might be the only guy in the history of fighting to do that.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, just to give you an example how crazy the message boards are, after that fight, people are like, oh, I don't know about Cain. Yeah, I mean, it seems like just a lot of hype. And it's like, all right, well, you know, a really good striker hit him a couple times, and, you know, he was rocked a little bit, but he still did pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm looking at the rules and I'm stuck on this damn Alessio situation because I don't know. I'm reading the rules and there's a lot of I don't know. It says, you know, if 5 minutes exceeds, the fight cannot be restarted and the contest must end. Well, deliberations on what was going on seemed like it took 10 minutes, not five.
Yeah, and really, you know, situations like that should be played out with your corner even before. There should be some set ground rules. I mean, I know guys who, you know, have agreements with their corner to where they will never say, I give up. It's always going to be the guy in the corner being the bad guy. So if Alessio, he should have had somebody that said, no, that's it. You know, he can't fight. And that would have taken the heat off him.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it would have been good to have a nice heel manager in the corner there. But
I mean, but again, then it goes into, you know, if you throw a towel in, the referee doesn't have to recognize the towel. The rules are kind of weird.
If you throw the towel in, then you're quitting. You're DQing your own guy, so you can't do that.
Yeah, but what if you wanted to do that because you knew? Okay, so you were saying that if you threw the towel in, Alessio would have been DQ'd and it wouldn't have been a no con. Okay. Correct. Well, yeah.
If you throw an object into the cage from the corner, your side's going to get DQ'd.
Hmm.
That's how they skirt around the situation with the towel. I mean, you could throw the towel in, it doesn't really mean anything. What it means is you're throwing debris into the cage so that you're going to get DQ'd.
So I guess when the referee and the doctor was talking to Alessio, they were in a neutral corner. So Alessio's corner couldn't intercede and say, hey.
They were supposed to be in a neutral corner, but it looked to me like his corner was right behind him.
Yeah, yeah, that's weird. I mean, why didn't one of those guys say, no, he's done. He's done because then
they can't talk. They're not allowed to speak to the fighter. Or the ref. I mean, they were talking to Alessio, and you could see the referee told him to be quiet. Anytime there's a low blow or a foul like this, it's supposed to be the fighters go to neutral corners, and there's no contact between them and their corner. But, you know, it looked to me like Alessio's corner was right there, but I'm sure the ref wasn't letting them influence what was going on.
Yeah, so that's the Bellator card. I think the next one is like July 18th or something. Let me look that up and give you guys an idea of who is on that card. Now, it looks like July 17th, that's a Friday, from Mohegan Sun. Looks like Doug Lima versus Koroshkov. How do you say that guy's name?
I think it's Andrei Koroshkov.
Yeah, for the welterweight title. Paul Bradley versus Chris Honeycutt. I mean, that's an interesting fight. Bradley wrestled at Iowa, and Honeycutt was, I think, at Edinburgh. He was probably a national runner-up. I can't remember exactly. But also on that card is Michael Page, a Brit who's getting a lot of hype, versus Rudy Beers.
Rudy Beers? See your favorite fighter?
Or Bears? How does he say his name?
No, I don't know if it's Beers or Bears. Either way, it's a pretty awesome name.
Yeah, Beers. Yeah, I would pronounce it Beers. I mean, I would just, and then nickname Cold.
Yeah.
Then you got your gimmick.
And
Paul Daly is back versus Dennis Olsen, who I can't confirm if he's related to the Olsen twins or anything like that.
I think he is the third Olsen twin. And there's Mary Kay, Ashley, and Dennis, from what I remember. Dennis Olsen's a guy from New England who's already fought Paul Daly and lost to him years ago. So I don't really know where this fight came from, but hey, it's on the main card, so I'll watch it. And the opener from that show, you know, they always, like we talked about earlier, Bellator packs their shows full of local guys. And they've got a guy that, you know, has a big local following down there in Uncasville with Brennan Ward, former tournament winner and 185 title contender. He's now fighting at 170, so he'll be in the opener. And I've trained with him, you know, a bunch a few years ago, and man, that kid's a wild man.
Is he the real or a jabroni?
Well, I mean, he already won the Bellator tournament once. 185. He did lose in the championship match against Alexander Shlemenko. But yeah, he's pretty damn good. He was a national runner up at Johnson of Wales. So he's a D3 national runner up. He's been boxing his whole life. His dad was a boxing coach, and you know, we were training jiu-jitsu together at a place in Rhode Island, Timberroll BJJ. So. You know, we've done a bit of training, and you know, he's explosive. He's still real young, and he's got you know, a lot of things that he can improve, but he also does a lot of things well. And you know, kid's a beast. Yeah,
sure. So let's talk a little bit. The UFC card last night from Hollywood, Florida, the Seminole Hard Rock Casino, which was,
you think Dolph Ziggler was there? That is Dolph Ziggler's place of residence.
Yeah, that's interesting why they picked Hollywood, Florida for him. Who, didn't he just sign a new contract with WWE?
That I don't know, but he did do a hell of a job on Swerved, I thought. Good for him.
So I don't know where you want to start with this one. The first fight, Diaz versus Makashvili, you know, I don't know if I'm saying that right.
But I think you did.
Yeah. So it was a pretty controversial decision there. It's a split decision. I kind of tuned out, man. Most people said it was a really boring fight.
Who said that? I thought this fight was pretty damn good.
Really? Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of spaced out, and then I saw some comments on Twitter that they weren't too entertained, but maybe they had done the same. How did you score it?
Man, it was a tough one. You could go either way. So I think the first round was definitely Hakran Diaz, right?
Yeah.
I think it was. I think the first round was Diaz. Second round was the one that was tougher to tell, and the third round to me was Makashvili. An interesting stat, and I'd have to go back and look and see who exactly he fought, but they said Makashvili had 15 or 17 takedowns in his last fight, which is, that's insane. Right?
Did he fight
nude? Yeah, I don't know. But he went out there and got taken down, you know, first thing. So they were battling back and forth. They'd each get takedowns. It was a wild, wild fight. Yeah, and I thought it was really good. I had Hakran Diaz winning, but the problem is I was watching it as a spectator. So the second round, Makhachkali, I think, was winning early on and probably up until the very end. And then Hakran Diaz was able to, kind of reverse the tables. But he was going for a lot of submissions, and Makhachkali would slam him and get out. So it depends on how you look at it. Like, he was in a tight, tight triangle. So do you give the edge there to Hakran Diaz, or do you give the edge to Makhachkali for slamming him out of the triangle and landing a few punches? So it comes down to how you view the judging, but this was a split decision that when the fight was over, it looked like it was going to be a split decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next fight, Thiago Santos, who is not the big fat Brazilian guy that kicked Eric Prindle in the balls like 3 or 4 years ago. This is a different Thiago Santos. Do you remember that guy? They called him the monster in Bellator.
I do remember that guy. Yeah, remember that. He threw the kick to Prindle, and then the next time they fought, Prindle threw a kick and kicked him in the balls.
You know, I vaguely remember Prindle putting a picture on Twitter of his balls. You remember that? To prove to people that his balls were like, I don't know. I don't even know what the word is. He put up a picture. I don't know.
It was real bizarre, right? Like, I can't remember exactly. I'm going to have the people screwed up, but one of the guys threw like an axe kick. I think what happened is Prindle threw an axe kick in one of the fights, and it broke Thiago Santos's like pelvic bone, but at the same time, which was legal, but at the same time, he hit him in the balls, you know, as the axe kick came down. And and then I think the next time it was like a little Santos like threw like a little kick, like he was trying to kick like an onside squibble in a football game. Right. And, you know, just kicked him in the ball, so.
And Prindle sold it pretty hard, huh?
Yeah. You know what? Those would be some good fights to go back and watch and report on.
Yeah. Somebody's got to make some kind of compilation of, like, the 20 worst fights ever. You know, but they can't be just bad, boring fights. They have to have a comedic element to them.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You could be the man for that job.
I don't know. It seems like too much research. But this Thiago Santos.
Maybe we could just come up with the fights and then beg a ham and egger online to do it.
Yeah, get some jabroni to do it. But this Thiago Santos is no jabroni. He head kicked Steve Bossé. I'm told that it's Bossé, not Steve Bossy. He high leg kicked this guy into the next decade. I mean, the way he landed, he was like in like three different positions at the same time.
Yeah, it was terrible, man.
I mean, it was just shin right on the side of the head.
Yeah, well, you could see where this was going. I mean, he had his hands down, like lower than he'd be carrying a hockey stick. So. I mean, I wasn't too surprised when he got his head kicked off. It did look pretty rough there for a second because he didn't move for a while. But hey, you know what? That's what you get when you got a last name like that and you don't come out to Kellis Ambasse.
I have no idea who Kellis is. Who is Kellis?
You've never heard that song?
No.
Oh my god.
No.
I think if I pull it up on YouTube,
what year did it come out?
It'll probably show up here on the audio. What do you mean? I don't know. Came out a few years ago. You definitely heard this song. If you haven't, then you're really
missing out. Yeah, I probably heard it.
Let's see if we can get to the... 'Cause I'm a boss. Can you hear that, Brian?
Yes, I can, yeah.
You don't remember this song?
I don't, no. But now we're gonna get pulled off iTunes because they have some gimmick.
Really?
They cut it to me.
Cut it, really?
They have some gimmick that can like trace copyrighted material, and I got in trouble once for I don't know how they do it. So like if they get you a second time, like they're thinking like you're violating copyrights and like
terms of service.
Yeah, and so like and then you have to like go give them an explanation. Like they have some way of like scanning it and then matching it up with copyrighted material. So, And I already got in trouble. That's why our intro has been changed. I don't know if anybody cares or anybody wants to know. That's why there really isn't an intro anymore, because I got in trouble for the Hendrix song.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah. That's the.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. As far as I'm concerned, you can toss the toss that Apple has. Get it?
Right. Now, the next fight, this is Antonio Carlos Jr., who I saw a lot of people just calling Carl's Jr. after the burger chain, which I think might be a good gimmick for the guy, because, you know, that's, you can remember that and maybe parlay it into a little bit of a sponsorship. And I think Carl's Jr. has advertised a lot during MMA fights. I mean, with, you know, they always have some scantily clad woman, you know, with a huge hamburger in her mouth.
Yeah. I actually thought that he was the heir to the Carl's Jr. throne, and that's that was his gimmick. Kind of like, you know, EC3. He's like the MMA version of EC3, but instead of Panda Energy, he's got Carl's Jr. backing him.
Now, is Evan Carter really related to Dixie?
Ethan Carter? No, he was he won the last, like, version of WWE NXT before it turned into its current incarnation of FCW.
Oh, shit.
It was Derek Bateman. Was his name?
I didn't see that one. But this guy, yeah. Carl's Jr., he's I guess he cut a pretty good promo. He said, you know, basically he thanked everyone, you know, even remotely. And like, if, you know, if they, what's his name, Anik brought up something. Oh, you're at a new weight, and he goes, "Oh, that's right." And then he'd go into thanking his nutrition guy.
Yeah,
he was very happy.
This guy, his first fight in the UFC was at heavyweight, so he's now down at 185, and he looked huge.
Yeah. He's a big, and Eddie Gordon. I mean, he's not a small guy. I mean, he looked like pretty well put together.
Yeah, Eddie Gordon looked like he was in, like, 10 times, maybe, I'll say, 13 times better shape than I remember him being in physically. And they credited that to a new nutritionist. And it looked like the nutritionist did a pretty damn good job. Unfortunately, you know, Carl's Jr. Had too much in the bag for him.
Now, isn't that funny, Tom, when they say, oh, yeah, I have a new nutritionist now and have a new diet, and that's why I have this completely different physique. And to me, that was always the code word for, you know, I got some new gimmick that I didn't have access to prior. It was like, it was always the dead giveaway. It was like, no, don't say you have a new nutrition guy. Just say, no, I've just been doing what I'm always doing. I really don't see a difference.
Yeah, what I'm going to start saying is, oh man, I've started working with Ken Yasuda, and he's really changed my body around.
Yeah.
Natural methods.
But I tell you, man, I mean, this Carl's Jr., I mean, that was the first time that I've seen him fight, and I was pretty impressed by him. I looked up his credentials. He had some really good credentials in jiu-jitsu. Vinny probably knows a lot about him, and he's only 25 years old.
Yeah, and he's only been a pro for like 2 years or something. So he's got a pretty big upside, and especially if they can keep him going down in that Brazilian market. I mean, he's somebody that could do some stuff at 185. I don't know if he's not like fluid enough yet to beat some of the top guys on his feet. I mean, but you know, he's huge. Guy's fucking huge. And, you know, the other thing with Truck Gordon here is, you know, since he won the Ultimate Fighter, he has not won a fight in the UFC. So that's three straight losses in a row for him. And, you know, the last one was a split decision loss to Chris Dempsey. So I don't know how the UFC looks at that, but, you know, we'll see where he goes from here. Could be gone.
Yeah, I gotta wonder now that they kind of have Titan FC under their watch, that maybe, you know, some of these guys that have lost three in a row. I mean, it used to be if you lost two in a row, you know, I'm talking when they only did the pay-per-views and then maybe, I don't know, six fight nights a year, you know, maybe when they were doing 20 cards. If you lost two in a row, like, you were really nervous. Now yeah, it's like they seem to give you three.
I lost two in a row at one point, but one of them was a split decision loss to Aaron Simpson that they kind of
I think everybody knew that was bullshit. And I think that the first time I met you, we were talking about that, and I had watched that fight, and it was a 10-8 first round. You really took it to him.
Yeah.
You know, and then nobody scored a 10-8, and it was like, well, if that's not a 10-8, what is? I mean, Simpson was just hanging on for, you know, in survival mode.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, whatever. It's in the past. But, you know, like I said, I mean, UFC views some things, you know, differently. I mean, the fight with Chris Dempsey that he had was a split decision loss, but I don't see anybody, you know, the fight that I lost with Simpson was a fight of the night, too. Mm. So, you know, we got a bonus for that. I don't remember Chris Dempsey and Chuck Gordon being a, you know, a big time exciting fight. So, you know, unfortunately for him, it looks like, you know, I mean, if I'm the matchmaker, he's gone. But I'm not.
That was a really good stretch for you. So in UFC 100, you got that $100,000 bonus. And then when you fought Aaron Simpson, was that 2010?
It was the beginning. I think it was right after New Year's. So it was early on. Yeah, I think in 2010.
Yeah, that was a good stretch for you, man. Two bonuses. And now it's like, you know, guys are begging for those bonuses, I guess, because they're not those discretionary bonuses that everybody tells you about. You know, they're just not what they used to be. And then
it's either that or they're not given out to everyone at the same amount. So you hear some guys who do you know, big time business at the top of the card and then get another big bonus on top of that. And the mid card or lower card guys, that just doesn't happen to us, you know?
Sure. And I wonder, you know, just getting back to Eddie Gordon's future here, I wonder if Titan FC is going to be a landing spot for some of these guys that maybe have lost three in a row because now the Titan is on Fight Pass. You know, I mean, it's good that they have a home, but, you know, Titan, they can't pay very well. I mean, I think they were paying Vinny maybe like 6-6 or something, or just something not very good.
Yeah. But outside the UFC, that's not too bad. One of the things with that is too, I believe the way that these deals work is that the UFC gives money to these companies for the rights to have them on Fight Pass. So, you know, from what I understand, I guess Titan FC would be getting more money, from the UFC, so they could put that towards some of the fighters, because I think that's how Invicta, the deal with Invicta is, because from what I understand, I mean, really UFC is kind of funding Invicta
right,
by giving them money for Fight Pass.
Yeah, and then that's the same that I've heard. So UFC will give a rights fee to Titan and say, here's $50,000 to, you know, for the rights to this card, we're going to help you promote it, go out and sell your tickets, whereas before on CBS Sports, they were basically paying to be on air, and then they would get a cut of the commercial revenue. And when no one's tuning in to watch, basically, it, you know, half of nothing is not much.
Ryan, are you sure they were paying? Because we had one of their CEOs on, and he did not say that they were paying for that time.
Yeah, he's completely full of shit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now the UFC's paying them, so it really doesn't matter. And I think it's a better platform, obviously, for any of these companies that can get on UFC Fight Pass. You can see, like, I mean, it did pretty good wonders for Invicta. I mean, there's a lot more excitement for these Invicta shows than there would be otherwise. So I think the more of these libraries that the UFC can gather up, I think the better off that Fight Pass is going to do. And, you know, it's a great service anyways. So, you know, more power to them. If it keeps some, you know, farm league promotions going, because they don't have the WEC anymore, they don't have Strikeforce, and, you know, really they've got a lot of guys on the main roster. So, you know, hopefully that, you know, Titan FC can become a pretty good feeder organization and start running shows more frequently and give some of the younger guys or, you know, guys who are 30 or whatever, who aren't necessarily on the way out, but aren't on a winning streak, somewhere to go and build themselves back up.
Sure, and just to move on to the co-main event of the card last night, Lorenz Larkin, the son of Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame shortstop Barry Larkin, he defeated a guy from Argentina named Santiago Ponzinibbio or just something like that. It's Santiago to me. What is it?
Ponzinibbio. Santiago Ponzinibbio.
Ponzinibbio. There we go. So Lorenz Larkin's looking pretty good at 185 pounds, rather. You know, just a pretty good guy's a pretty good striker, pretty exciting guy to watch.
He's at 170 pounds now.
Oh,
he dropped down from 205 to 185, and now he's down at 170.
Oh, okay. When he fought King Mo, was that at 205?
That was at 205, and then he dropped down after that. I believe that was like his first loss. He dropped down after that. And you know, he has a win over Robbie Lawler in Strikeforce. Lorenz Larkin, I mean, he's no joke on the feet. This guy's like, the Monsoon is a very fitting nickname because he's like a whirlwind of punches and kicks, and he's awesome to watch.
Like a gorilla.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Gorilla,
I don't know about the
Gorilla Monsoon before anybody takes that in a Yoel Romero or, that before that takes on its,
So anyways, I don't know about the haircut he had. It was like, it kind of looked like a steaming dookie on the back of his head, but kind of odd version of a mock.
I saw somebody on Twitter said that he allowed Stevie Wonder to do his hair. I don't know. I don't know who said that, but I can't take credit for whoever came up with it. That was actually a pretty good comment. But so here, the next thing, Yoel Romero versus Lyoto Machida.
We didn't even talk about the fight, really.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much know what happened with the fight. Now, what happened after the fight?
I'm talking about the Ponzinibbio fight.
Oh, what do you got? What do you got about
it? Well, I mean, Ponzinibbio, let's not discredit this guy because he was game as hell. I mean, he was eating shots at the end of that fight that would put out, a lot of people. So I want to see this guy fight again even after he took this beating, He didn't look like a chump. He just looked like he wasn't as good as Larkin.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there was a time there he threw a couple punches back at Larkin, and I had bet on Larkin, so I was rooting for him. But I was like, oh wow, yeah, Larkin might be in some trouble here.
He was able to pull it out, obviously, and Ponzinibbio took like one of the worst beatings, I guess you'll see, with a guy that is still functional. And he never really got knocked out. He didn't go down. The referee stepped in and as they were standing, and Ponzinibbio kind of stumbled away. So it wasn't a controversial call, but you don't really hear a lot of guys coming out of Argentina in the way of MMA. So I love seeing guys from these smaller countries where the sport's still developing do well. So I'll be rooting for Ponzinibbio in the future.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned. I don't think I can name another fighter from Argentina. I mean, I can name boxers like Sergio Martinez and Marcos Maidana and Lucas Matisse, but not MMA. I can't really think of any others. Can you?
Yeah. No, I can't think of too many. Give me a second. I'm sure I might be able to come up with somebody, but I don't know. And it's coming from a country that invented the Argentinian backbreaker. So,
actually, I forgot. Don Morocco, isn't he from Argentina? Rocca?
Argentina Roca, maybe. Roca. I think Don Morocco is from Morocco, right?
Or Hawaii or something. Don Morocco is a medicine man. He would send the Sheik some very good medicine from Hawaii, some good herb.
Yes, I'm sure that he did.
All right, so here's the thing that we've been teasing this whole thing. Yoel Romero, Lyoto Machida, I mean, there's really not that much to say about the fight. Romero was really, really talented fighter, and, it seemed like the first round he was fighting like a fighter that had never fought in a 25-minute fight before. He was kind of conserving his energy. Second round, I thought that he started, the outputs increased, but it was still, it's like, hey man, let's kick it into the next gear here. And then in the third round, he just, you know, took down Machida and then threw five or six elbows and Machida just went out.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's pretty explosive.
Yeah. You know?
And I'm not saying that in the way that Mike Goldberg does in reference to any black guy that's out there fighting. I mean, Yoel Romero's like, as soon as he got this takedown, he was landing these elbows. He was blasting them. And I think it's something that a lot of fighters can learn from. You know, you got to take advantage of these quick opportunities, these quick finishes. You know, you hear about it. You're a wrestling fan. You hear about it, Brian. Like, quick finishes are the way to win matches. You get in a single leg, you finish that single leg right away. You don't give the guy a chance to recover. And a lot of times in MMA, people get takedowns, settle into a position, and then start to work. Well, Romero, and if you watch, he kind of just like ragdolled Machida down. I mean, he went through two different techniques there, but it wasn't as if he did like a real technical takedown. They were kind of locked up, and he threw Machida to the ground and immediately just blasted him with elbows. And, you know, like I said, this is something that I think a lot of fighters can learn from. Hell, I know I'm going to start training this immediately, so.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find online here a transcript of what he said in his post fight interview. Do you have it, or do you know where I can pull it up so I can just, so there's no controversy on what he actually said?
Let me see. I know I did see one last night on Twitter, but you know, there's been a lot of, Romero's talked a lot about it too. It's not as if he's you know, trying to hide from this. So I think you've got to believe, you know, you got to believe what he said.
So basically what he said, wow, my friends, I want to say something. I'll try English. Hey, UFC. Hey, Miami. Hey, Florida. Listen, people. What happened to you, USA? What happened to you? What's going on? You forgot that the best in the best of the world. The name is Jesus Christ. What happened to you? Wake up, USA. Go back. Go for Jesus. And then, you know, this idiot on Bloody Elbow, because this is where I'm getting it, this moron, Anton Tabuena, some jerk off, is saying that Romero said no for gay Jesus. He definitely did not say that. He said no forget Jesus.
I mean, like, they got, don't forget.
Yeah, he meant, because the guy's English is horrible. He said, no, yeah. Forget Jesus. He said, I don't want you to forget Jesus. But I'm shocked that this is still even up, that this hack, that the editor, if they have one over there, hasn't taken this down yet. So, you know, it caused a lot of controversy, and it seemed like there was just a lot of people who heard what they wanted to hear and not actually what Romero said.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you here, Brian, 100%. I don't think he went out there trying to make anti-gay sentiment. And I'll read what he said at the press conference. You know, he said, what I was trying to say in the octagon was look for the American dream. I think he meant Dusty Rhodes, but I'm not sure. Yeah. There was a misunderstanding who you can look all you want, but unfortunately, you're not going to find him anymore. However, he did thank the U.S. for the American dream, so. You must be a Dusty Rhodes fan.
Yeah, you know, and that was something that I said on Twitter, that I think Yoel Romero is the American dream. If you take a look back in history of, you know, people that came over here looking for a better life, this is a guy, you know, I don't think everyone's familiar with what you have to go through to defect from Cuba. I mean, now it's a lot easier because the diplomatic relationships are better, but usually it meant that you would have no contact with your family. I mean, you were just, you could never see them again. You could never visit your home ever again if you came to the United States. And yeah. he actually defected to Germany first.
Yeah, I think Sweden.
Well, it was either Sweden or Germany that he was.
Yeah.
And then I think that was because he was trying to get into the United States, and for whatever reason, it was just easier to defect there and then figure out how to get from Europe to get a visa over here.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to continue to read what he said, too.
Yeah.
So he said he was looking for the American dream. There was a misunderstanding about gay marriage, and I want to say something. God told Mary Magdalena, Maria Magdalena, you're a prostitute. Go and don't sell anymore. And he told her with love, who am I to judge anybody? Even though I didn't refer to that, even though there was a misunderstanding, I will tell you something. God made man to be free. Anybody can do whatever they want. I wouldn't be the type of person to critique anybody. I've got to live with myself first, be a better person, and be able to love people. I didn't refer to anybody. What I was trying to say was, the United States, thank you for giving me the American dream. There's no better country in the world because it is blessed by God. It is in the dollars that this country was made by Christian people. That means it's blessed by God.
Well, I mean, that's a pretty good promo, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And because I see these people online on Twitter saying, well, if he wasn't talking about gay marriage, what is he talking about? And I don't know. I don't read minds. Is he talking about the Charleston shooting? Is he talking about the gradual decline of the United States compared to some of our rivals throughout the world? I don't know, crumbling family values in his – I don't know what the guy's thinking about. But no, he definitely didn't say anything negative about gays.
And another thing, why is the decline of the U.S. – as far as being like a imperialistic power, like why is that a bad thing? You know, I hear like people, you know, let's use the UK as a great example, right? At one point they were in control of a lot of the modern world, okay? And now they're not. They're like not second rate, but they're not necessarily, I mean, they're a world power, but they're not controlling other you know, other interests in other parts of the globe, right?
Yeah.
And I'd say the world's probably better off for that.
Yeah. I think we're kind of on the same page there, Tom. I'm more take more of a libertarian type view. I think we should mind our own business more. But I think there's a certain amount of people who equate global dominance to economic dominance. And we've seen that is – declining, and other economies are emerging, you know, economies that were totally down in the dumps, you know, when we were kids.
Like what?
Well, I mean, you take a look at China. Russia is on the – is resurging.
I don't think it's doing too well right now.
What's that, Russia?
Yeah, I think a lot of the secondary countries, Brazil, Russia – India, China. China's a different situation, I think. But these other countries, you can look at Brazil, and they're not doing well economically right now at all. And a few years ago, they were projected to be doing really well by this point. So it seems like some of these countries that were expected to develop into bigger powers, it's not happening. And you know, with technology, how it is now, it's a lot easier for people in different parts of the world to access you know, different products. So it doesn't have to be, you know, like a situation where everything's manufactured in one place and they control it. You know, I think it's better off with, you know, it's basically a spreading of the wealth, I guess. But yeah, with that being said, I mean, these other countries like Brazil, South Africa, they were really projected to be big time powers.
We really the trade really went up. We're talking about globalization of trade, straight from. I mean, I kind of said it. I was like, you know, Yoel Romero. I mean, he takes people down and viciously batters their skull with his elbows, and we're worried about him possibly having an anti-gay opinion. Possibly now. We're worried about that. It's like, what is this rush to be offended? And it seems like it's the media, these MMA media guys.
Dude, if he would have gone out there and said, you know, what's wrong with you, America? You're letting gay people get married. If that's what he had actually meant, which I don't think it is, I'd be offended.
Why would you be offended?
I'm kind of offended by the way he went after America anyways, you know. I understand it. I don't think it's how he meant it. But when you say, what's wrong with you, America? Wake up. I'm fucking awake. I've been awake for 32 years, buddy. Don't come out here and tell me that I need more God in my life, because I don't.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess I did see some people upset that he kind of called out the country. And, you know, who is he to do that when he's an immigrant to this country, and he's only been here maybe 5 years or something. I did see some people with that saying that
Yeah, well, that's what America was built on. So, you know, he can use his freedom of speech all he wants, but man, if you really don't like some place and you don't like the way things are going and you can't change it, then get the hell out. You know, like, I mean, clearly, there's more wrong with other parts of the world than there are in America, and you know, other parts need to wake up more than the U.S. So, I mean, to throw that at the U.S., I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, that is a legitimate gripe against what he said, but that's not what the alleged MMA media is upset about. They don't care about that. They're concerned that somehow he might have, could have, in a roundabout way, insulted gay people, and they're up in arms about it. They're bitching, moaning, crying. And it's just like, hey, you know, these guys fight in a cage, and, you know, whatever he thinks. I mean, how does that change your life? Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, unless he goes, you know, unless he shows up in San Francisco in the Cortez district and, you know, or whatever it is, Castro district, and which would be fitting in a way. Unless he shows up there and goes nuts and starts taking people down and elbowing them on the street, you know, realistically, he's not causing a big harm to anybody, even if his views are, you know, anti-gay, which I don't think that they are. Speaking of which, okay, this is completely unrelated, but it's kind of back to what we were talking about off topic there. Do you see this, speaking of misreportings, did you see the what was reported as an ISIS flag at a gay pride parade in New Orleans?
Oh, come on. That wasn't an ISIS flag on CNN?
Did you? Yeah. Did you? Do you know what I'm talking about or no?
Yeah, I put a picture up because I thought it was funny that I said, you know, did you ever think maybe ISIS and the gay community are kind of in cahoots? So they're, it's like a joint promotion?
Yeah, because it gets reported on CNN that this is an ISIS flag, and upon further review, it's a flag filled with dildos and butt plugs, made to look like an ISIS flag. So props to whatever. I'm assuming this guy is on the UG or the OG or something. So props to whatever guy made this ISIS flag with butt plugs and stuff. Because hell, he got exactly what he wanted. He trolled CNN. He's like, it might have been one man army. It could have been Bo Taylor.
You know, and it's amazing. Those, like, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, they seem like they could be trolled real easily. Like, there's some fire at a tall office building, and someone will call in, and they'll give them a fake story, and then, like, 2 minutes in, they're like, yeah, and so what do you think of Howard Stern's penis? And they're like, okay. You know, have you ever seen those on YouTube? Those,
yeah,
the Stern clips. I mean, it's just like how do they don't do any due diligence? They don't check, like,
no, they're like I don't know. They're like people that just post rumors on the internet,
like me. Okay, so
I didn't say that.
Yeah. All right, so, you know, we talked a little bit about some of the hot button issues, the two great knockouts from this weekend. So, really, I mean, Romero, I saw some people saying, oh, you know, way to take attention away from your performance. No, not really. No, the performance, if performance just spoke for itself, then you wouldn't even need to do interviews. Romero elevated himself, and even if he... some people are upset about him. That's upset at him for what he said. I bet you they're still going to watch, and he's going to fight Jacare.
Yeah. I think the next step is him versus Jacare on the Weidman versus Rockhold undercard. Obviously, so that when somebody gets hurt, they can just throw one of those guys into the title match.
Yeah, you know, it'll be interesting when that fight takes place, because I don't think Weidman wants to fight on that September 5th card in Vegas. He usually likes to take the summer off. But they had tried to get Verdum to come back for that card, and I don't think that's going to happen. So unless he's going to change his mind and they'll do Stipe versus Werdum or Arlovski if he gets injured. But it looks
there's
like
really, besides like 155, and I mean, you even have multiple guys there. There's really not a whole lot of instances where there's a clear cut number one contender across the board at any weight. I mean, I guess you could say at 115 strawweight, Claudia Gadella would probably be the number one contender, but I mean, she's going to fight with Jessica Aguilar. So the winner of that is going to be the number one contender. So at least we'll have someone clear cut there. But at 125, like, you know, really who's the best guy between Dodson, Benavidez, you know, Cejudo, those guys, you know, no one really knows. Well, there's no clear cut guy.
Dodson's getting the match.
Yeah, I know he is, but I mean, after that last performance against Makovsky, can you really say he's more deserving than Benavidez or even Cejudo or
Super Callis says he is, and you know it'll be the largest drawing pay per view in all of combat sports history. So, who am I to argue with Super Callis?
Super Callis lost to some pretty suspect people in WCW, I think. So, you know, let's not take everything that he says as gospel here.
Oh man, yeah. All right, so you know that's what we got for you guys this week. Next week, July 4th weekend, I don't think there's anything big happening in MMA, but I know Brock Lesnar is wrestling somebody in Japan that's going to be on the WWE Network next Saturday.
Supposed to be Kingston, but I don't
know. That was the original. It's just kind of weird how they're not hyping it more, like for the first time ever, you know, live from Japan.
Well, that's what the commercial on Monday appeared to be about, but they did not mention opponent, which makes me think that it still will be Kofi Kingston because they're pushing it as like the return of Brock, not, you know, a Brock versus Kofi match, obviously. So my guess is that Brock goes out there, tosses Kofi around a bunch, probably throws around New Day, the entire lot of them, and then walks out with the pin. Hey, going back to Super Callo,
yeah,
Brian, you know, this guy lost to Lash LaRue.
Lash LaRue? Who is that? Is that the guy with
Corporal Jin?
Lash LaRue, man.
The guy.
See my life flash before my eyes.
He was in Misfits in Action with G.I. Bro and General Rection. He also lost to Disco Inferno. He lost to Fake Cyclope, which was Dean Malenko. That was actually a really awesome gimmick there.
Lash.
I got to find The Barbarian versus Super Callo from WCW Saturday Night in 1998. I'm sure that's a great one.
A classic. Classic, I'm sure.
Yeah, we should go back and watch some of those. It would be great if you you know, checked your phone once in a while.
Yeah. What was that? Great American Bash 91?
Yeah, we both just so happened to watch probably almost the entire show, but not all of it.
Is that the one that started with a scaffold match?
Yeah.
I don't like those scaffold matches, man.
No, they're boring and it's a high risk of injury. Luckily, like this one, I had no clue what was going on. Plus, you have PN News, who's like 500 pounds on top of the scaffold. I mean, whose idea is that?
Yeah, and you know, the only guy that looked comfortable up there was Bobby Eaton, beautiful Bobby Eaton, I guess, because he had been in a scaffold match a couple years before. The rest of the guys look legit fucking scared, and I don't blame them one bit.
No, I don't blame them. I don't blame them whatsoever. Yeah. Hey, you know who's really awesome after watching that? Like, I'm watching that show. Did you see the Dustin Rhodes and Young Pistols versus the Freebirds?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Brad Armstrong, underneath that Bad Street gimmick.
Yeah.
He was like clearly the best wrestler in that match to me.
Yeah. Is he still refereeing for WWE?
I don't know, but no, I think it was his brother that was refereeing. I don't think he's refereeing.
Brad Armstrong? Well, which one died?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it was him. Could have been him.
Oh, shit. Yeah, Brad Armstrong did die.
Well, I don't think he's reffing anymore then.
Yeah.
But,
maybe yeah, it's Scott Armstrong, the referee.
Yeah. Are you sure it's not Stretch We got Stretch Armstrong. Who are some other people that could be in there?
I don't know. Who else is Bullet Bob Armstrong?
Bullet Bob Armstrong, Stretch Armstrong. Yeah, I don't know. I forget. I thought there was more guys with that last name. But
so are you going to watch the TNA pay-per-view?
Okay, yeah, I don't know. I've been trying to convince myself not to, but I have this like undying urge to watch it. It's kind of like watching WCW towards its end. You know it's not really going to be something you want to watch when you're doing it, but you know, it's like a dirty enough little thing. You know, it's kind of like a dirty, guilty pleasure.
And the King of the Mountain match, man, it's got to be the worst gimmick ever. To put the belt on, it's like a reverse ladder match. Like, remember they did the reverse battle royal? I was like, this is the dumbest shit I've ever seen.
That was the worst ever, that match. You got guys pretending they can't get in the ring, like they're fighting outside. Should it just be a fucking mad dash into the ring and the fattest, worst, out of shape guy just loses? I mean, that's what it should be.
Oh, to me, that was literally when I said, you know, I don't feel like watching TNA anymore. I mean, I used to watch it a fair amount. I used to order the pay-per-views when they did once a month. When I saw that, I was like, nah, this is garbage.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I mean.
Hey, are you going to be in town in Las Vegas on July 20? No, shit. Well, yeah, you're fighting that weekend. So I'm on that Friday, I'm going to be at Global Force, and then that Saturday, I'm going to Chicago for your fight.
Good Lord, man.
Yeah.
What a travel schedule that's going to be.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm
just hoping this Global Force. I hope they don't pull anything and, like, you know, cancel it or something.
Yeah, and the week before that here is a Ring of Honor show, which I wasn't aware of, so now I'm pretty pumped up for that.
What date is the Ring of Honor show?
It's either 17th or 18th.
Oh.
So it's the weekend before. And
Where is that at? Oh, like Samstown something?
Yeah, I think it is at Samstown Casino. The last one they ran, I think, was at the Orleans, but that was a pay-per-view. So, yeah, I think they're at Sam's. For this one. So, hey, Las Vegas has turned into a little wrestling hotbed.
Yeah, as it should. I mean, a lot of people, like, you know, it's a cool place to live. There's no income tax, at least state income tax, so it's kind of like Florida.
Yeah. I wonder how a show like, you know, I don't think they're going to run here, but a show like PWG would be, where it's kind of more of like, it's like a night out.
Hey, that reminds me, did you see who showed up at Pro Wrestling Guerrilla on Friday?
Yeah.
Sofia Vergara.
You know, Jay, it's not my fault.
Apparently she just got married to this guy, and he felt like going to see some wrestling matches, and she tagged along. And some of the pictures of her, she looked quite uncomfortable there.
Yeah, well, hey, that's a lesson to all you you pathetic mouth breathers out there. There is hope. You can be a wrestling fan and still end up with a hot chick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So I guess we'll talk about, you know, what we're going to do next week. I don't know if there's going to be much to talk about other than maybe a little bit about WWE, unless there's a MMA event that I'm forgetting.
No, I think next week's the one week that that it's completely open. I don't know anything that's going on next week. Big holiday weekend. And, you know, I think a lot of people stay away from holding shows that weekend because everybody likes to go out and get fucked up.
Exactly. All right. That's it for this week. Later, guys.